All right, well, let's get started, everyone. Welcome. My name is Patrick Dunn. I am tonight's technical facilitator. A little bit about me. I am the Vice President of Marketing and Communications at the Council on Social Work Education in Alexandria, Virginia. I earned my APR in 2019, and this online program was a big part of that. So I'm glad to serve as our technical facilitator for Module 1, which is focused on public relations as a management function. So if you're signing in, let us know in the chat after studying the materials so far. Are you comfortable giving an elevator speech about what public relations is? So yes or no or maybe, and we'll turn off the music. See some maybes. Not yet. Well, that's okay, Richmond. We're going to get you set up here. Okay, good. So please stay active in the chat throughout tonight. Post your thoughts, questions, and interact with your colleagues. Now, did you work through the task sheet for Module 1? You know, it's best to come to the evening sessions prepared, and these sheets can help you organize your studies. Of course, this the program here is broken into weekly meetings, but the work that goes on behind the scenes, those task sheets can help you get prepared for these meetings and stay on schedule to meet your goals. So make sure to click through the links for additional readings or to complete the tasks. Again, you're operating on your own timeline, but these task sheets, again, can just help you stay focused and to reach your goals. And of course, we want you all to earn your APRs. That is the goal here. So we had a question come in from an online candidate. How do I connect with a mentor or a coach? So thank you for your question. And remember in the chat window to use the caps or the Q&A function, question in all caps, so it stands out for us. There is a LinkedIn group that you can join. And don't be shy about reaching out to APRs there at the LinkedIn group. Reach out to several and you should be able to connect with any APRs who are absolutely more than willing to help give you feedback or provide other information. Again, we're here to help you reach your goals, and that is to earn your APR. And you'll find facilitators like today's presenters on there. And speaking of them, it's my pleasure to introduce Josh Fry, APRM, and Madison Lewis. Josh, can you tell us, welcome, and tell us a little bit about yourself and earning the APRM?
Sure. Thank you for having me this week. So I just earned my APR. I guess the actual date would have been November. I started studying in April, and I'm in the military, so I was going for the APR plus M designation. And I started studying. I was supposed to transfer back to Washington, D.C. from Bahrain, where I was stationed, and I had already turned over, but then we got caught in the stop move from everything with COVID. So I was pretty much told I needed to stay home and wait until we could leave. And so I started studying, and then I joined the online course. And it really helped me start to set out a study path and plan. And prior to that, I had read through the study guide, which gave me enough just to kind of orient me to it. But then the study course really helped me put me on a path towards, being able to have designated study plans each week, and then go back and focus repeatedly on the material as I move closer to the actual panel and examination. And I can talk more about what the experience with the exam was like under the COVID conditions later. I sat for the panel, which is a little bit different for people in the military or with DOD going for the plus M designation, where that's the only opportunity really as an APR candidate to be able to focus on the plus M part. So the questionnaire is different for us. it's focused a lot on your joint military education, as well as your experience as a public affairs officer in the military. And then, so the panel presentation is really the opportunity for them to ask you the questions that are specific to the plus M portion. But the format in terms of how to create a public affairs or public relations plan are really the same steps. And there is one APR on the panel, which is actually helpful because it forces us in the military not to speak in acronyms and to be able to make sure that we're communicating clearly to everyone. So that was a very useful part of the experience as well.
Excellent. And speaking of panel presentations, we have one tonight. So we have a packed schedule. I'm glad you're all joining us. And thank you, Josh. Now, Madison, can you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself and your APR journey?
Absolutely. Can you all hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. I have accidentally kept myself on mute in about 10 meetings today. So this will be the one that I haven't done that. I'm Madison Fisler-Lewis, APR. I received my APR last year. I began studying for it about 2 years ago. And then unfortunately for me and everyone else who's been dealing with it, COVID hit, which kind of led to a lot of crazy stuff with work, but also with my panel presentation going virtual, which was very, very new at the time. I did mine in April. So it was right when everything got shut down. But I was very thankful for everyone that kind of came together and helped me make that happen. And taking the test, I will say that this course, I actually took it, I was in two cohorts, not just one. I loved it so much I came back. And I found it incredibly helpful to work with people that were kind of along the same lines as me, but also that had very different jobs than I did. I work in the government sector. So most of the folks that I work with kind of do the same thing. So it was really helpful to come into this course and do the same things, but with people that bring a lot of different perspectives in it. So that was something that I really appreciated about this course. I was able to take my test and complete it. It's very exciting when you finally get to the finish line, but I'm still in my first year of accreditation.
Excellent. Well, thanks. And Josh and Madison, thank you both for joining us tonight. Now we're going to get into some of the programming elements. We're going to start with our practice question. So as you work through your module resources, these practice questions are a great way to prepare yourself for the types of questions that you are likely to see on the APR exam. They focus on just one KSA. And really, these are about processes, not facts. It's more about working through your knowledge of RPI, or tonight, of public relations as a management function, and keying in on that process rather than rote memorization of facts. And as you progress through your studies, you'll see that these are generally multiple choice. Sometimes it's pick one answer. Sometimes it's pick a couple of answers. But you're going to want to go with the best answer, and that is according to your studies and according to what the APR designates as the best answer. So with that, we have two questions tonight, one from Neely and one from Jess. Jess, why don't you read the question for us, and we're going to read the question, we'll read the possible answers, and then we'll select the answers. Jess will provide the rationale for the answers, and that's how we'll proceed to the next one too. So Jess, why don't you take it away?
Thanks. You are the public relations director for a small chain of grocery stores in Western Massachusetts. You receive word that despite your organization's best efforts, it has been revealed that one of the deli workers in your store with the highest traffic deli worked an entire shift with mild COVID symptoms before getting a test and finding out she was COVID positive. What are the first two things you would do in response to this? A, put out a press release letting customers know that anyone who was in the deli area during those hours should get a COVID test and self-isolate for several days. B, meet with the store's management to find out what part of the company's COVID policies failed. C, present to your CEO the various options and responsibilities your organization has in the wake of the incident. Or D, get in touch with public health officials to find out what your organization legally must do to notify staff and customers, as well as to prevent this happening again in the future.
Okay, thank you very much, Jess. Now, let's get to some answers. Seeing some B and D, some C and D. Remember to type in your response in the chat window. All right. And the answers are B and D. Jess, can you provide a little bit of rationale for us?
Sure. Following the research, planning, implementing, and evaluating structure, both B and D represent steps you may take in the research phase. A was implementation and C was the planning phase.
Okay, now let's go to our presenters. So Josh and Madison. Madison, let's start with you. Some thoughts on the question, the structure of the question. Is it something you might see on the exam?
Sure, absolutely. So one of the biggest things about the APR exam is that that's exactly how the questions are structured. So it's not necessarily what is the correct answer? The answer is what is the most correct. So that's one of the hardest things that I think it is to internalize as you're going through this. But I think the structure of that question, that's exactly what they're gonna throw at you. And I was very impressed with the rationale. I think that's exactly how you should rationalize it as you're going through it. Great job.
Excellent. And Josh, any thoughts to add to that?
One of the things that's sort of a common theme throughout the exam and then throughout the whole study is not rushing right into, you know, we want to, a lot of us as practitioners, we want to react quickly and send out a press release to do something. So the important part about the study is to take that step back and say, well, wait a minute, is there some way we can get more information through research, through talking to somebody to pose the right recommendation to go ahead rather than running straight into what could be a wall in front of us. And then also, you know, all of the answers may seem correct, but it is to pick the best ones for the purposes of the question.
There we go. Well, thank you both. And on to our second question now. We have Neely. Are you with us? And would you mind reading?
Sure, I am. And I apologize. I tried to mention this is actually the wrong question that I submitted to you. So this is from a few weeks further down the road. So it doesn't really apply with the readings from this past week. Okay, but anyway, here it is, the scenario practice question. You are the communication specialist for your city's housing authority. The authority has teamed with a local nonprofit community farm market to bring local organic produce weekly into the resource centers in its public housing communities. Thanks to a grant, the produce is being offered to your residents at no cost. To maintain and renew the grant next year, however, the authority has to prove the program has been a successful one, but 3 months into the program, it has not been. The farm market complains that it has been throwing away produce unclaimed by residents each week, and a few residents have complained to community managers that the produce they've been given is spoiled. Looking further into it, you discover that none of the produce is spoiled. Your residents just aren't familiar with many of the fruits and vegetables being offered and do not know what to do with them. You have been tasked with developing a public relations plan for getting residents to buy into this program, thus allowing the authority to keep its grants.
Just jumping in. So again, if this isn't from tonight's reading, you know what, let's read through the answers and we'll take a quick stab at it. And then we'll get back to maybe a discussion on sort of the structure of the question. Sorry, Neely, go right ahead.
Sure, okay. What are the first two things you do in response to this? A, write and send out a news release to local and HUD media announcing the grant reward and start of this farm market program. B, work with the farm market manager each month to feature an article in the public housing community newsletters highlighting the various produce in season for the month and provide easy and expensive recipes for each item. C, educate residents on how cooking fresh produce at home is healthier and more affordable than buying convenient processed food and fast food. And D, use some of the produce each month for each community's Head Start snack time and provide activities and resources for the children to share about the produce with their parents.
All right, let's seeing some heavy on the B's, a few A's, a few C's in there, a few D's. All right, Neely, talk to us about the answers are B and D. Could you give us a little bit of your rationale, please?
Right, and this is taken again from EPR 11, pages 170 to 173. And the correct answers are B and D. Both answers employ actual activities or events and methods to implement strategies that should be included in your plan. Both effectively reach your plan's intended public housing residents in your community. And while choice A is a tactic, its efforts are not directed toward and will have little impact on your intended public. And choice C is a strategy that may be included in your plan, but is not an actual event, media, or method like a tactic.
Okay. Josh and Madison, talk to us a little bit about, again, that's a sneak preview. And thank you for Neely for reading through it. I think it was nice to see sort of where we're going to end up in a couple of weeks. But talk about the format of the question and any other thoughts you may have on that.
So I think, I know that the information included in this question was a little bit further down the road, but one thing I will say about the structure, the long form questions are really common on the APR exam. And the important thing that this question kind of showed us is how important it is to pick out the most important information and not just understand what the question is saying, but understand what answer the question is looking for. It can be kind of difficult to, I found it difficult when I was taking the exam to come across questions of this length and with this much information and try to figure out an answer for that. But looking for the keywords was really helpful. Understanding the differences and some definitions is really helpful as well. But you will come across questions that are about that long and about that complex. So I think it was a really important one to include.
Thank you, Madison. And Josh.
This was pretty similar to a lot of the questions that I can remember that I saw, but I don't remember that any of them were particularly that long. And then there are a few features within the test itself that if you find that you're spending too much time on it, you can mark it and go back, which actually saved me in the end because I realized that there were a few questions I hadn't actually marked the answer in them. But also it's reflective of situations that you would experience during your career, everyday job in which sometimes you may get a call from a reporter and information is presented to you. The APR study process gets you to take that step back and maybe that's not the full picture of information and that you need to go elsewhere to assess whether or not that is the full picture and the accurate story, because at the end of the day, it's the accurate information that we're trying to convey and put out. And I think the answers that went back to try to get after what is the real situation speak to that as well.
Excellent. And now it's on to our module notes. So again, we are focusing on public relations as a management function. So I'd like to welcome in Molly McGowan-Gorsuch to walk us through the notes. And a quick reminder that there may still be availability if you go to your module worksheets to sign up to take notes. This is a great way to really internalize and digest the information in each of these modules and help you work through some of your APR goals. So with that, let's welcome in Molly.
Hello. Nice to meet everyone. So I take pretty copious notes, but it helped for me to actually break a few things apart in this. I felt like I was going through several different texts. And for me, I'm a visual learner, so you'll note later I kind of create sort of a graph, which was helpful. So how do I go to the next slide?
If you just tell me next, I'll go ahead and advance.
Next. So diving right in, it helped to just define the public relations. I found the definition most helpful. That includes the management function, the mutually beneficial relationships, and then identifying the fact that it's between the organization and the public's. And the purpose is to build relationships with a variety of publics to enhance organizational reputation. I made a note that it's also not to sell goods or services, because later in our readings, we find that that actually more closely aligns with marketing and advertising. And another purpose, as defined, is influencing people's attitudes and behaviors to further organizational goals. And later we also read that journalism is more just informing. So to me, it kind of was helpful to put the two things that it was not next to the things that it was. Next slide. I wrote down trusted counsel, internal communication, media relations, community relations, and external communication as broken down into the competencies. And then the other elements or activities that were listed in our texts include issues management, crisis communication, and publicity and special events. And one thing I noted, and at least in reflecting in some of my own practices, I was getting confused kind of what my activities were versus my actual management function. So it was kind of helpful to see those broken down in competencies and other. Next slide. To break that down further, as a function, I listed that they may or may not include any of all of these activities, kind of based on what your role is, I guess. Marketing is offering products and services to meet demands after identifying needs and wants, and sort of similar to advertising, but not exactly the same. Publicity is uncontrolled, and that it's you're placing your message in media, but the media is essentially the gatekeepers. And press agentry is just attracting the public notice through newsworthy stories, not actually informing or building public understanding. As a function, our public relations may include any or all of these additional activities. Public affairs is maintaining those organizational relationships. And again, it was organizational relationships is always just constantly being reminded of in our notes. But this more specific with governmental groups and community stakeholders. And then like a deeper dive is that lobbying is even more specialized, and that's specifically to influence legislative and regulatory decisions. Internal relations is something that we probably, a lot of us already do, but it is again addressing those mutually beneficial relationships, but it's between the manager and employee relationship. Issues management, crisis management, similar, but not quite the same. One I think is a little bit more proactive or kind of seeing it coming down the pike versus crisis is kind of when you're in the thick of it. So issues is anticipating and identifying and evaluating and responding to trends that are potentially going to affect organizational reputation. The crisis management piece I thought was pretty interesting to note that it's we're in charge of responding to stakeholders affected by real or perceived consequences, which we all know sometimes is the more common consequence. And it's about managing organizational reputation. Investor relations is another function that we may be doing, and that's specific to corporate PR, and that's about maximizing market value. And development is another one that's sort of specialized, but to nonprofits, and that's building relationships with donors, volunteers, and members to specifically secure financial and volunteer support. This is the part where I started drawing, because I'm kind of a visual learner, and I was reading a lot of things about this is what it is and this is what it's not, and this is how media is owned or not owned or controlled or uncontrolled. So this is all on one page of paper in my book, but I broke it down into slides here. So public relations, I identified the primary function using sort of a combo of definitions. And then in our readings, we kind of saw the difference between segmented publics versus audiences. Publics are tied together by a common interest, and whether they self-identify by that, or if we as public relations practitioners put them into a public. And our media is owned because it's original content that is controlled by the organization. Marketing, more of a selling transactional exchange situation versus managing relationships. And in marketing, you're identifying audiences versus publics. So they're less active, they're more passive, listeners, spectators who may receive a message but don't necessarily have a common connection. Advertising, again, selling goods and services, and again, targeting audiences. That media is pretty obviously paid. You get to control the placement by renting space. So that's the most controlled media. And publicity is similar to press agentry, generating information for news organizations because something has news value and you actually can value the newsworthiness of it. To attract public notice. Again, audience, and that's a specific audience, is your news media. And that's a unique type of media in that it's earned and not paid for, but mediated and controlled, since again, they do decide the newsworthiness and the placement, and you're not actually giving them money in the advertising department. This was also helpful for me to break down, because I found that across EPR, and then the other book I cited, they broke it down to roles and levels of influence. So defined by Cutlip and Center, they called it roles, and levels of influence was in the strategies. But communication technician is focused on the technical aspects of communication. So you're explaining the decision policy that you're not necessarily part of the creation of, so you're sort of the last to know. Expert prescriber, it feels good because you're viewed as the authority of public relations, but it's not always the most strategic and can be detrimental because top management kind of gives you the most control. They step out of it, and then PR becomes isolated without the influence of a decision maker's expertise. Communication facilitator is the boundary spanning role. You're kind of the liaison. You're encouraging two-way communication between the organization and your publics, and you're acting as the official information source and the links, but you're still not in the room where it happens, if we have any Hamilton fans. The problem-solving process facilitator is part of the strategic planning team, collaborating with top managers to define and solve problems. And your thinking and your PR thinking is factored into the decision making. So hashtag goals. Next. And PR strategies and tactics broke it down into the roles and levels of influence. Advisory, that's the lowest level. Top management really has no obligation to run anything by you or take your counsel. Compulsory advisory, they'll take your information because they have to at least listen to your expertise. But concurring, authority is the PR position is you're reviewing and approving all communication materials. I kind of viewed it as like that you have to put your stamp of approval on things before going out, but it is not necessarily the most strategic. Next, please. And this kind of broke down the difference between technician and manager. Technician, you're a wordsmith for your organization, concerned with content and writing. You're not part of management, not necessarily concerned with strategic planning. That's, and for some people, that's fine. That's where they want to live. And that was noted on our readings. You saw a lot of people live their whole careers doing that way. But manager is where the strategic thinking is. That's when you're using your environmental scanning, your research skills, the RPI really comes in, and you're part of the management team because your counsel is greatly valued and you think of outcome and impact instead of just content.
Wow. Well, how about a big hand for Molly, a virtual hand for putting together some great notes on PR as a management function. You know, earning the APR, this whole process, it really is about demonstrating that you have the knowledge and the tested, accredited skills to have a seat, to be in the room where it happens, as Molly was saying. To go back to Hamilton, thank you again for those great notes and the way you personalized some of those, I think was very wonderfully done. And that's a great way to, again, you know, just kind of internalize this information a bit more. Let's go to our presenters real quick, Josh and Madison. Josh, we'll start with you this time. Thoughts on PR as a management function?
Yeah, so this one I had to actually go back to a couple of times to really kind of get the grasp of what they were talking about, because the lexicon of many of these terms are different within the military than they are in the PR world. And initially, there's sort of a tendency by us to say, oh, that's totally different, we don't have that. But then what really started to help with my learning is to go back and look at my organization or organizations that I've worked in and start to identify these different things. And they're just maybe called something different, like strategic communication is more in our world closer probably to marketing in some senses. And then as you move through your career, you start to move up in these positions where they change. In some situations, you're an advisor. And in others, then as you move up in seniority, then you do start wearing that manager hat. And then it also teaches you how to work better with many of these organizations, because you may not always have all of these functions underneath your roof. And in order to get the job done or a campaign done, you need to reach out to other organizations within the government to help utilize them towards that campaign or public affairs plan.
Great, thank you. And Madison, any thoughts on PR as a management function?
Yes, that was actually one of the things that it was most difficult for me to get my brain around, because for a long time, I'm relatively young in my career. I came to public relations late. I was a journalist first. So when I came to it, I was mostly focused on that being that technician role, getting the things done. And then the reason why I decided to go for my APR is because my boss and my director decided it was time for me to take on a more managerial role in our organization. And to do that, it's necessary, of course, to start thinking more strategically and having just kind of altering the way that you think of things and going through the process of the APR. One of the things I noticed about myself and about a lot of the folks I was studying with is that it really challenges you to change that way of thinking from doing the thing to thinking critically and strategically about how to do all the things and delegating those other aspects of it. So I think as you work through this, a lot of participants are going to kind of see their thinking and their way of approaching things evolve and kind of see their functions and their jobs evolve along with it.
Wonderful. And again, Molly, thank you for some great notes. We are going to move right into our panel presentation practice. And just a quick setup here. Your panel presentation, again, this is one of the two key components of the APR process. These are presented to a panel of APRs who are looking to see your knowledge of RPI or your grasp of PR as a management function through your presentation. The panel will in many cases interrupt or stop you mid-presentation to ask questions. So sometimes people report this being more of a conversation than a straight up presentation. But I know that other modules have gone through some of the details of this, but we are glad to have Dave with us tonight, who is going to run us through his panel presentation. Dave, I am just going to turn it over to you so that we can try to get you the whole presentation in here before the meeting ends. So thank you, and we're glad to have you tonight.
Great. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, great. Hey, everybody. So my name is Dave Faggard. I'm a lieutenant colonel in the Air Force, and I'm one of 10 major command. I need to set the stage for you because this is for an APR plus M briefing. And so some of the stuff you're going to see in here is going to be like weird lingo. You know, there's going to be a lot of, you know, if I knew then kind of what I know now type of stuff. And then also in the military, we don't do public relations, if you will. I'm a public affairs guy. So that'll come in later in your studies, you know, towards the end of the cohort. This is my second cohort. And then we also have these laws that really affect us in how we do communication. For example, like the Gillette Amendment, I'm not allowed to affect any type of lobbying or legislation. So just a couple of things. And I promised Michael that I would not go through this whole presentation because it is quite long. So I'm going to skim over some of the highlights, and Patrick's going to help me. Okay, next slide, Patrick. Okay, so some of the situational analysis. So my organization is called Air Force Global Strike Command, roughly made up of 34,000 employees spread across a dozen locations in the Midwest and West Coast. We're the ones responsible for the Western Alliance's only fleet of international bombers. So I'm sure you guys all saw us for the Super Bowl flyover. That was a huge win for us. And then we also have the other half of our command is the intercontinental ballistic missiles. That's roughly 2/3 of the nation's nuclear weapons that I'm responsible for doing communications about. So roughly 3 decades ago, you know, when we focused more on Middle Eastern security and less on the Soviet Union when the wall came down, this new threat has now started to occur. And this is called global competition. So nations like China and Russia continue to modernize their nuclear arsenals, whereas the United States, while we've been focused on the Middle East wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, have not. So currently we have a missile, actually we have 400 missiles in the ground that were designed for 10 years of service life. And they now just turned 50 years old in 2019. They cannot be modernized. Estimates are that this plan will cost us roughly $100 billion in today's dollars throughout 2075. Now, especially due to budget tightening and environmental factors like COVID stimulus relief and you know, the administration changing, my leadership has focused me on one, developing a communication campaign focused on modernization, specifically on the threats that America faces, which most Americans have no idea about, the necessary modernization program of my 2/3 of the triad, whereas the Navy guys will focus on the submarines, and then highlighting our quarterly unarmed test launches. We call those glory trips. So while this has all been unfolding at the change of this administration, there's also been a new growing body of opposing and uninformed narratives. There's roughly 11 uninformed narratives that I combat on a daily basis, heavy misinformation and disinformation online. So anyways, I am going to go on to the next slide, Patrick. Thanks. There we go. So this is some of the research that we've conducted. This is not all of it. I tried to limit it to one slide. I'll key in on the bold efforts here. So the top one, that is the latest quantitative content analysis. It was basically our part 2 media baseline. So post our glory trip 236, we name all these things GT for glory trip, and the 236 times we've launched this missile system. So what we've found is that there is a growing spike in anti-ICBM media narratives by unknown actors inside our Western press. So that created a media content baseline where it allowed us to know, what are we up against? We did a primary interview of our top three general officers, so all four-star generals, where we determined from them where they thought the issues were. That was just qualitative. Basically, you know, hey, they pay the bills. What do you want us to do? What do you want us to say? What are we missing? You know, they've been around 35 plus years, so each. So obviously great insights there. The fourth bullet down there was just secondary research. We conducted a qualitative assessment, you know, basically a web review of congressional views about the weapon system itself, the ICBM missile system. It was a great report done by University of Maryland, and you'll see why Congress is important here in a minute. And then an additional secondary research there was a qualitative review of foreign threats. Really, if we're going to start talking about other nations to educate Americans, you know, we need to understand what really is going on out there. Next slide, Patrick. Okay, so the problem statement here, and I've used some bold language and I've used some underlines. This was the only way my mentor and I could come up with what this problem statement really says. So United States decision makers, obviously those that are in power in the White House and in Congress, my employees who are airmen, my allies who might be responsible or see the strategic deterrent umbrella that our systems provide, and competitors, right? Those folks that might cause or maybe not want us to have these, they all lack awareness, really is what I'm saying, that the Minuteman III, that's the missile system, it's safe, secure, reliable, and effective, however, in need of modernization. Safety focuses in on the governors in multiple states because you have governors and state congressmen. Our weapon systems are spread over five different states. And when you think about how big a nuclear missile weapon system is, it might take you 6 hours to get from one side of our facility to the other. So traditionally we fly in helicopters when we go out. These places are massive. We need to also show that they're secure. A lot of Americans might think that, you know, you have missile systems out there, they need to be secure. Reliable, so when you have allies around the world who are guaranteeing that they don't need a nuclear weapons program, they're relying on the strategic deterrence of the United States by treaty and by agreements. They wanna know that if they're necessary, they are used as a strategic deterrent. And then finally, our messaging that that the system is effective, it will work when needed. However, all of those are at odds with the effort here of modernization. So you guys all have seen these six questions in the template. You will see them if this is your first cohort. You will see these questions later on in one of your later lessons. So I just left these on the slide and I'll plan on talking to them in my presentation. Next slide. Okay, so my goal is that my publics will see the system as safe, secure, reliable, and effective, but need a modernization to protect America while keeping pace with America's competitors. Next slide, please. Okay, so these are just four of my competitors, or my publics, I'm sorry. I actually have over a dozen publics. This is a massive, massive communication campaign. So the Nuclear Weapons Council is actually six individuals. And these six individuals that are in the Department of Defense and Department of Energy were, this was a body that was created after World War II. These individuals are responsible for the basically the modernization efforts of the United States system. Obviously internal employees, right? So I have internal employees that fall under AFGSC, that's Air Force Global Strike Command, that's my team. And then underneath that is 20th Air Force. And then underneath that is the 90th Missile Wing. I won't get into all the specifics about, you know, hear about the situational theory and you know, whether they're earlier adopters and innovators, but we've done that work and you'll see on the next slide. My external publics, so obviously we talked about the congressional strategic subcommittees on both the House and the Senate side briefly, governors, congressional members in the states, towns, mayors, council members. And then this is one area where I know the smart APR folks are arguing with me now. Clearly mainstream media, is not a public. It's a tool. It's a way to reach a public. However, one area I would like to reach are the decision makers in Russia, China, North Korea, and Iran. And however, with those primarily blocked and closed off media, you know, basically you can't get into a lot of these countries without forcing yourself into propaganda. So I created a public of mainstream Western allied media in Japan, South Korea, Germany, and the UK, primarily to educate and basically get into the propaganda states of Russia, China, North Korea, and Iran. Next slide, please. Okay, so this is a slide that probably doesn't mean a whole lot to a lot of you guys right now, but Grenig's Situational Theory of Publics. So I'll pick one of these apart right now. Let's go down to public four, mainstream Western media. So Japan media, as you can imagine, is near to North Korea. North Korea traditionally fires ballistic missiles over the Japanese people, creates a lot of chaos. It's quite alarming when you're out there. So the Japanese media are fairly supportive, even though, you know, in World War II, obviously they're the only nation that has, you know, experienced one of these devastating weapons. So it's obviously terrible. They're very aware, they're very active, but they are an info-seeking audience. And obviously the Japanese people are protected under the strategic deterrence of the United States. South Korea, on the other hand, is extremely North Korea focused because they are right there. As a guy that's been on the demilitarized zone, actually looking, 20 feet across from the North Korean soldiers, this is a big deal to them. They also are not a nuclear state, and we provide that nuclear strategic deterrence for them as well. They are active, they are supportive, but I'd say that they're somewhat latent to an active audience or public, I should say. And then finally, you see the bottom in red. These are these different nations here, like I was saying earlier, obviously North Korea is a closed media society or media public. You cannot get in there unless it's obviously bad news. Russia has a tendency to always go as a hot issue whenever there's anything about strategic weapons. Russia is constantly, one-upping. And then China traditionally does not tend to engage with us. Mainly, they believe that the Americans' nuclear deterrence is a North Korean problem. So it's quite interesting. Next slide, please. Okay, so we're going to run through our objectives real quick here. So in the presentation, obviously, in my plan, I created an objective, and I didn't really know a whole lot about this. Until I joined this class, I realized, hey, I'm doing some of these things wrong. So revised objective here on the bottom, 100% of congressional strategic subcommittee members have knowledge of launches within 24 hours pre-launch window and share positive sentiment on social media. So I'm really going for the effect here of creating knowledge in the members that can vote on support or vote on modernization of the weapon system. And I'm trying to create an attitude so that way they become brand ambassadors for my systems. Based off the Gillette Amendment, it is illegal for military members to influence congressmen. So we basically notify them. I literally give them the same press release that I would give press. Congress members have classified or they have security clearances. So clearly they go multiple layers deeper than what the press would get. So next slide. Objective two, this is for my audience, one of my employees. My employees have knowledge of these launches, and the 2021 visits to my internal websites increase 25% over 2020. Obviously going for a knowledge and behavior because I'm trying to drive people to my websites because I'm trying to create awareness and education. Next slide. So objective three here is within 96 hours of post-launch, 20% of my employees will visit that website, which hosts the press release, and they will share positive social media sentiment, obviously going for attitude and behavior. Like I mentioned earlier, we have limitations on budget. You'll see in a minute how cosmic our budget is, but not for public relations. Additionally, surveys are next to impossible to get done in the United States government, which is funny. And then obviously the United States government can't friend people on social media. So I just ran into this actually this past week. where I'm not allowed to, basically due to various laws, I'm not allowed to see what other people are sharing on social media unless they share it to me directly as the organization. Next slide, please. So objective four here is this is going after the media. So within 96 hours after launch, allied media outlets in Japan, South Korea, Germany, and the UK with a reported audience greater than 150,000 placed one accurate message of prominence, going for behavior here. Next slide. Objective five, one influential civic leader will share at least one positive social media post or publish an opinion editorial in support of the ICBM within 6 months of any test launch. Next slide. So some of the strategies, I'm not going to get into a whole lot of details here. Basically, leveraging these glory trip test launches quarterly as anchor points, creating buzz around them, aligning legislative affairs, aligning the Pentagon and fielded leaders, and then using social media and Western media to engage and inform. Next slide. So I'm not going to get into a whole lot of messages here, but these are actual messages from approved public affairs guidance. So I know a lot of you guys are, you know, worried about an arms race and are worried about saber rattling and nuclear weapons and all that. And I assure you that those are not the goals. We do not seek any of those same things either. Obviously, we live in a world with nuclear weapons, and we're, you know, we're working inside that world. Next slide. Tactics, won't get into a whole lot of this. One thing I'll point out here, the flight test unit missile launch, that's the top bullet here. We did that last February of 2020. So this February is 1 year. So we're almost done with this plan. So we've actually got quite a bit of good results and evaluation coming back. We build all of our tactic engagements as packages. Because as you can imagine, with a missile launch like an ICBM, these missiles are launched in Southern California. They fly up into outer space or into space. I shouldn't say outer space. They fly into space. They travel 6,000 miles west to the Kwajalein Atoll, and then they land in their designated area, all with 1960s technology, in roughly 30 minutes, 15,000 miles an hour. So clearly what we do has high stakes because we don't want to create any type of miscalculation. So packages 1 through 3 are all scripted. They're all highly scrutinized by folks in the Department of Energy, Department of State, NASA, and the Pentagon. And then obviously optional package 4 would be any type of weather delays, protests, Charlie Sheen, any type of anomalies, things like that. Next slide. Okay, so the budget, it costs roughly $18 million per quarter to launch a missile. That's a lot of money. I got it. Yeah, so the PA budget for each launch is roughly 10 grand. I'll let you guys do the math. It needs to be a little bit better. My boss was blown away when I showed them this, and I gave him the analogy. What do you think Amazon would do, or what do you think Apple would do if one half of 1% of the new iPhone was spent on marketing and public relations? So. Next slide. So the timetable and task list, as you can imagine, there are organizations globally. My team's about 150 folks, and this is over a year. Some of my evaluation steps are looking out 10 years. And so we really had to generalize this slide. The spreadsheet is massive for what is actually happening here. So next slide. Okay, some of the evaluation, this is where I'm gonna nerd out a little bit on you guys. So in February 2020, we actually ran what's considered a media embed, where we put media out in the site to create that media baseline. And unfortunately, COVID pretty much changed everything. So that was the last time we did this. We produced 3 reports per launch, a 24-hour qualitative quick look where my team is working in the middle of the night to give national leaders a heads up on what the media environment is doing. I do a 96-hour qualitative and quantitative media sentiment report. You see it over there on the right bottom. It's built off Meltwater and Dataminer and a couple of other proprietary tools. And then finally, we do an in-depth report that measures all of these against the baseline. Next slide. Okay, so a little bit of nerding here. I talked about message penetration. This is an in-house formula that we created basically just to get after how much our messaging resonates inside press. This is big in foreign media because obviously we don't speak the language, and so we're having to rely on Google translation. Next slide. All right, so we're going to blow through these here. I'm going to focus in on the Greens. So objective one, 100% of the subcommittee members were notified on time. We got great balanced coverage in The Hill and Politico, which obviously informs congressional members. And then one member, actually a member of the SASC, posted a positive opinion editorial a couple weeks ago. And this is what he said. Our nuclear deterrent has prevented world wars for 75 years. Both legs are effective deterrents, but as they age past their intended lifespans, maintenance have increased while their reliability has decreased. So he carried the water. Next slide, please. These details for the employees are still coming in. We are working with the contractor to assess our web statistics. Next slide. So evaluation against number four about the press. Obviously, they were notified on time. One thing I saw is that in one of our launches, we secured 600 stories, but we had really low message prominence. I retooled our tactics release plan, and then we increased that coverage by over 160%. And in one of our key publics, the South Korean media, we saw an 8,100% rise in media volume. And then we thought we wouldn't get into Russian and Chinese press, and we actually did get quite a few stories. And believe it or not, they were fairly balanced. We didn't do well in the United Kingdom, but that was because we had our own bomber deployments going at the same time. Next slide, please, Patrick. So objective five here is that one civic leader would share positive sentiment. One did share positive sentiment in an opinion editorial. And then you can see right there what he says, let's be realistic and see the world as it is. While our nation's nuclear enterprise is safe, secure, ready, so we got that word wrong, reliable, we are behind in nuclear modernization and that must change. So that business leader, CEO carried the water for us out in that newspaper. Next slide. And that's it. I think I'm right at 20 minutes, a little over.
Ooh. I'll pause. Very, very well done. Very well done. Let's quickly go to our facilitators. Josh and Madison, can you give us a couple of quick thoughts as we're running close to the end of our meeting tonight? And again, just a fantastic job, Dave.
Sure. First of all, Dave, it's good to talk to you again. I work for everybody. I worked with Dave in Europe, and I've actually talked intermittently throughout the course of our APR study. I guess the biggest takeaways for me, I thought it was a great brief. You hit on a lot of the things of what I think the presentation is intended for, which is really to judge your command of and understanding of how a lot of the theories like the Gruning theory come into play, and how you identify different publics and how you're going to create objectives on how to influence or change their perspectives. The one thing that going into my panel that I worked with my mentors in the Pentagon was that you, up front, when you have your objective, what they'll want to know most is, okay, how well did you meet that objective? And I think that you illustrated that at the end of your brief with the evaluation and the data that you applied to that. And then I don't think it was a problem for you, but for me, as I was going into it, I rehearsed my brief so much that it came to a point where it felt like it was almost too scripted. Just for everyone, the panel will help you get through that, because they'll ask you questions throughout and we'll make it conversational. So just best to know your material and knowing that it ultimately will not sound robotic because of the conversational format that the panel takes place in.
Excellent. And Madison, anything to add? You had a lot of notes I saw in the chat about a mastery of the RPI process in here.
Yeah, so I was, I guess, kind of live tweeting this, chatting with the participants with my thoughts. But yes, I definitely agree. This was a really well-planned, executed, and thought-out presentation. I did want to especially call out that one of the most important parts that you did was not just mentioning the outcomes of what you guys were doing, but really relating that back to the objectives that you set in the very beginning, and kind of making that connection and pulling it all together. So overall, Very well done. I think you will do just fine in your panel.
Excellent. And a few housekeeping notes before we end tonight's meeting. We do have some openings, you'll see, for people to take notes and possibly even do some questions. So please go through the modules and volunteer. This is a great way to really focus your attention on a particular chapter and a particular module that you want to really get sharp on. Again, thank you to Dave. Thank you to Neely. Thank you to Jessica. And thank you to our presenters, Josh and Madison. Everybody, fantastic job. Thank you so much. And it was a pleasure being with you tonight. And remember, read and study at your own pace. Recordings will be available tomorrow. And don't forget to dive into task sheet number 2 on ethics and law. So thank you very much. And we'll see you later, everybody.